Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
You know, Hub, I think you hit a great point there.
Hub Arkish.
The Arkish family in pro football media journalism has been around almost as long as the game itself.
670 The Score's NFL Insider.
I think the Packers have got problems on defense. I think they've got, you know, two great pass rushers. But other than that, it's not an impressive unit.
Shaw Media and Pro Football Weekly.
Obviously, I was going for can of worms, but I've heard bag of snakes, too. I don't get why they get such a kick out of that. I'm not sure.
They love malprops on this show. Parkins and McNeil, they are the Score police.
Hub Arkish, isn't that getting better than this?
Hub Arkish with McNeil and Parkins on 670 The Score.
Where the hour is brought to you by U.S. Water Heating Solutions. They service any type tank, tankless, or boiler system for homes and businesses. Hub with us a couple of days ahead of the NFL draft by way of the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, and we have a legitimate blockbuster, Hub. Gronk is back, and he's going to Tampa along with a seventh-round pick. Bill Belichick gets an extra fourth. What's your reaction?
Well, it's certainly interesting, you know, guys. If this is the Gronk that I saw wrestling last week, then it's a waste of time. He has not tried to be in football shape for a year and a half now. He clearly is nowhere near the physical specimen that he was a year and a half ago. But the flip side of that, I guess, is that it's hard to see anything really starting on time. The Bucs would not have made this deal if Gronk wasn't committed. He has time to, you know, get in the gym and get to work. So it will be interesting to see, if he is healthy and if he can get back into football shape, you got a Hall of Fame tight end for a fourth round pick.
You think this means it's a certainty the Bucs are going to part company with O.J. Howard?
No, not at all. I think the best case, even though they gave up a fourth-round pick, they did get back a seventh in addition to Gronk. This is a gamble on greatness, but it's no sure thing. Now, they've got Cameron Brate there, too, you know, which has put them in a pretty nice tight end situation. It's not to say they won't deal O.J. Howard. But the question really is, what are you going to get back for him? You got to get at least a four, and maybe you could get a three, depending on who you talk to. I would think he's worth that. But I don't know that you can be comfortable enough that you can count on Gronk that you want to go ahead and deal him, at least not at this point.
You think O.J. Howard's worth more than Gronk?
Well, yeah. I mean, he's younger. He has not reached his potential yet. He will probably never be the player that Gronk is. But again, you know, you're talking about in Gronkowski, a guy who's had multiple, you know, major injuries, has missed significant time, has been away from the game a year and a half. I want to say he's 30 years old now. So
he'll be 31 next month, yeah.
Yeah, so I just think as you weigh where the two players are at, today I would think that you know, listen, O.J. Howard is a first-round pick who some people thought was going to be the next Gronk. You know, and is it because he's not that good a football player, because the Bucs haven't brought it out in him? So he's certainly worth at least as much, if not maybe a little bit more.
I didn't see the wrestling event to which you alluded, but have similar feelings on Gronkowski. He had trouble getting off the ball 2 years ago. He looked like a really beaten man. I want to, in your mind, Hub, given a normal career, when does a player start to earn? When does a player wear the label old?
Mac, it's a fickle game. I mean, I've seen old 27 and 28 year olds, and I've seen 33 and 34 year olds who are playing the best football of their careers. A lot of it just depends on the individual. It depends on the beating that they've taken. But it's usually, I think if you had to find a median, it's probably somewhere about halfway through that second contract. There's very few players who are still the player they were when they go for that third contract.
Do you think that Ryan Pace will be interested in O.J. Howard? Should he be?
Well, I don't know. I mean, part of the problem with O.J. Howard has been that he has never really, it seems, really tried to block all that much, let alone learn to be a blocker. He is, you know, physically more of a Y prospect than a U prospect, and Lord knows they need one, because right now the only Y tight end really on the roster is Adam Shaheen. And so there would be good cause to be interested, but would you be concerned that you're getting another Jimmy Graham, you know, that you're getting another Trey Burke, another guy who's a good pass catcher but not a complete tight end? Honestly, I think just looking at some of the tape and scouting, this kid Harrison Bryan out of Florida Atlantic is fascinating. And as much as I'd love to see Cole Kmet, the hometown kid, end up a Bear, he's got a lot of work to do before he becomes a Y tight end. Right now he's an athlete who's a pretty good pass catcher. Harrison Bryant looks like a solid Y who's a really good blocker and has the ability to be a threat as a pass catcher. Two different scouts used George Kittle as the comp. So if I'm going to use 43 or 50 on a Harrison Bryant as opposed to trading, well, here's the other problem, is what are they going to trade for O.J. Howard? All they've got is two number twos, and then you go to five. So unless they can deal one of those twos first, I'm certainly not giving up a two for O.J. Howard. So I think they're in a pretty tough spot if they want to make that deal.
Parkins is trading Tariq Cohen for him.
Yeah, Tariq Cohen in a late round pick.
Well, then how do you replace Tariq Cohen?
He's not very good. It shouldn't be that difficult.
No, that's not true, Danny. He may have disappointed you in his third season, but he's very good. He can be a threat when used properly and not have to do things he doesn't do well. So, I actually had in the Ask Hub mailbag, I had a couple people saying, why not trade Cohn and let Cordarrelle Patterson play that role? And Patterson probably could do some of those things, but Tariq Cohn's a pretty unique weapon. Here's a kid who in his second season is a first-team All-Pro. I'm not ready to trade him for O.J. Howard.
So you think Tariq Cohn's more valuable than O.J. Howard?
I think right now, based on their years in the league, he is. Yeah, I mean, if you want to talk ceilings and upside, that's a different conversation. But based on what we've seen, yes, I think right now I'd rather have Tariq Cohn.
Ryan Pace said today on the tight end position, we accumulated some guys who are interesting for us. Not necessarily good, but interesting nonetheless. What came out of today's conference? We played about 6 minutes of it. What was your lead today, Hub? You participated. What was your takeaway?
Mac, I mean, you don't get much out of Ryan, and that's not a criticism. He's like most GMs. I mean, 2 days before the draft, what's he going to tell us? I was a little disappointed when he even refused to say which positions were good. But other than that, I thought that some of the most interesting answers, though, were relative to trading and relative to, you know, the issue we're talking about, which is tight end. One of the things that I've been noodling as I've looked at where they're at the tight end, I'm terribly concerned that Adam Shaheen is literally the only Y tight end on the roster. And I don't really see Adam Shaheen making this team. But if you take a step back and think about it, if Shaheen makes the team and you're in the red zone, and you put Jimmy Graham, Adam Shaheen, Demetrius Harris, and Allen Robinson on the field, who's going to defend that? That is a one of the great red zone mismatches you've ever seen, you know. Mm. And so there is some value there, but you don't play 60 minutes in the red zone, so that's where you got to take a step back. I do think they're going to draft another tight end if they do not trade one of those second round picks. That's the way I was reading into it. And I also think that, you know, again, reading into it and trying to dissect his answers, I think ideally he'd like to trade one of those second round picks, because you can probably, I've looked at the trade value chart, and if you trade 43, you can get a pick at the end of the second round and in the middle of the third round. And if you're still sitting at 50, that's not all that bad. So, my two takeaways was that my sense is that may be what they're thinking right now. It may be more trades, but at least that. And I don't think they're done at tight end, because they know they don't have a legitimate why.
Hub, when Ryan Pace talked about high IQ players as a priority for this offseason, is it simply because the offseason might be truncated? Is that why he's putting an extra emphasis on it?
Could be, but I think that, you know, he would argue that that's always been, excuse me, the dog is ripping out the headset again. Molly, you got to stop this.
Come on, Molly.
Working at home, guys. Yeah, Mason's getting her now, so now she's in trouble. I think that ideally he'd like you to believe that it's always a priority for him in terms of high IQ players, but that at the same time, we know that he's tend to be a traits guy, so I think he's trying to combine the two things. He was asked specifically about the potential of a shortened off season, depending on when things start. And actually he started his answer by saying, you know, it's not something I've been able to think a lot about. So, I would think that as you look for NFL ready players and plug and play guys, that's going to be a priority for a number of teams, but you can't just leave all the high ceiling guys on the board because those are the guys who become your Pro Bowlers.
He has been a guy who's had a tendency to go after athletes in the past and not afraid to roll dice. I'm hoping he grabs a football player. Whether he keeps both of them in the second round or does move down to get additional, you know, it's time to start drafting guys who have a reel of football highlights at the Division I level. That, call me crazy, but that's kind of what I'm looking for, Hub.
You know, Mac, it's funny. Joniak and I were talking about this this morning for a while, and we were echoing what you just said. I go back to the Stone Ages when I was getting started, and the two people after my dad passed who took me under their wings and taught me the NFL were Jim Finks and Al Davis. And I asked both of them early on, and then like 10 years after I asked Finks the question, I asked Bill Tobin the same question. And they all said the same thing. Now, you know Al Davis loves speed, speed, speed. But all three of them, their drafting mantra was, we want really good college football players who were extremely productive in college and played at big-time winning programs. That was kind of where they started their hunt. And I've believed that my entire career. And when you go back over the last four or five decades that I've been doing this, you'll find that the teams that draft the best are the teams that draft those guys.
Hub, I'm curious what you think of this theory. I had the lead draft analyst of Pro Football Focus on last week when Mac was off, and we were talking about Chase Young at the top of the draft compared to his teammate Jeff Okuda, the top tight end, or the top corner, excuse me, from Ohio State, and they've been putting out a lot of great pass rushers and a lot of great corners. And he was saying that he thinks that the value of a great coverage guy has actually surpassed the value of a great pass rusher, partially because in this NFL, it's all about snap and throw, like getting the ball out really quick. Guys are operating out of the shotgun 95% of the time, and it's a way to neutralize a great pass rush. We saw it happen to Khalil Mack a lot last year. Do you think that's accurate? Is the value of a lockdown cover corner at this point in this NFL more valuable than a A-list pass rusher?
No, I would actually strongly disagree for two reasons. Number one, if the ball's coming out that fast, the corner's not going to cover him anyway. He's going to catch it in front of him. And number two, great pass rushers make good corners great corners. Great corners don't help pass rushers. And then number three, I think the great pass rushers are a little harder to find. So obviously you want both. But to me, if I'm going to put a priority on one, I'm going to prioritize the pass rusher, not the corner.
I probably would, too. It's not far behind. It's 1 and 1A for sure, defensively.
You don't think in a coverage sack? Because I'm with you. I always thought it was pass rush over the coverage guy, too. But I also thought that it was complementary, right? Like a good pass rush helps a mediocre secondary. A great secondary helps a mediocre pass rush, that sort of thing.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, the coverage sacks, all sacks are great, you know, but the coverage sacks are not really game changers. They happen because the play wasn't there anyway. The pass rush makes life a lot easier on those corners. So, again, listen, you want both, obviously, and they probably are, you know, 1-2 in the NFL today in terms of importance. But I'd still one of the reasons, you know, I'm disagreeing with a lot of my peers on the Bears' needs in the second round. A lot of people say cornerback. I'm not as worried about cornerback because the pass rush got exponentially better with the addition of Robert Quinn to Khalil Mack. And so that's going to help these guys cover. Whereas, a great corner. I mean, the longer the play develops, eventually you get a coverage sack, but also the longer the play is out there, somebody who's not being covered by the great corner comes open, So I'm going to take that pass rush pretty much all the time.
Yeah, you're higher on Tolliver than I think most of us are, because we just don't know much about him. What makes you believe in this guy?
I don't, Mac, I'm not. I mean, I've seen some good things. I know that the Bears are fairly high on him. I'm higher on the group more than I am on Tolliver. I know they're very excited about this Trey Robertson, who they gave, I think, the biggest CFL free agent signing bonus ever. I mean, they went out and competed and got him. Michael Joseph has been around for a couple of years now and has got the body type you'd like. Artie Burns is a former number one pick. And don't forget, they drafted two cornerbacks last year. And unless they're saying that they're both busts and Duke Shelley and Stephen Denmark, plus Buster Skrine can play on the boundary if he has to, they've got a bunch of options there. So I'm not happy. I mean, none of them are Prince Amukamara, but it was a cap decision they had to make, and I just got more options there than in some other spots. I think they need a starting safety more than they need a starting corner, because, when you look at Houston Carson and Deion Bush and the kid they got in from Kansas City, they're all career backup special teamers. Why is one of them suddenly going to be the answer? So when I look at the secondary, hey, if they get a great corner, I'm not going to argue about it, but I don't see it as one of their top two or three needs.
So how many starters does Ryan Pace need to pluck from this weekend's draft? Or let me just say, contributors, and not necessarily starters, but guys who are going to play a ton. How many new faces does he need from the draft?
Well, I mean, realistically, unless they trade with only two picks in the first four rounds, two is the ceiling. That's you can't count on getting instant contributors in the fifth, sixth, seventh rounds. There's not a ton of Adrian Amoses and Bilal Nichols out there. It's nice if you do it. And so if they don't trade out of one of those two picks, I think they both have to be players who come in and make an impact and contribute this year. If they trade one of those picks and turn it into two or three picks, I think they still need to get at least two guys who can come in, and start to make it. I think what you got to decide is, what did you think of this roster at the end of the year? Was this team closer to the 12-4 club we saw in 18 or the 8-8 club we saw last year? Talent-wise, when I look at some of the factors that played into some of those losses last year, and I'm just talking about roster overall talent, I think they're a little closer to 18. And so I think if you get, one solid contributor, you can call him a difference maker. I think if they're a solid contributor, they're a difference maker. You get one on each side of the ball, and I'm thinking the place where they could make the biggest impact would be at safety and then either tight end or left tackle. I think you've done pretty good.
Hub, what do you think you know about the first round of the NFL draft on Thursday?
I think that at least four or five first-round type picks are going to be available at the start of day two, because these quarterbacks are going to get badly overdrafted. I worked on this for a few days and finally wrote it last night. And if Tua hadn't had the injury and he was 2 inches taller, I have no doubt he'd be rated ahead of Joe Burrow. And I think the teams will get past the 2 inches because of what guys like Russell Wilson, Kyler Murray looked like he's going to overcome it last year. But then you get to the uncertainty of the hip. He's still, to me, clearly ahead, though, of Love and Herbert. I've got Herbert slightly ahead of Love, but I've got him at 26 right now, just based on grades. And then Love is going to go in the first round. But again, based on grades, I think I've got him at 41. And Hertz and Fromm and Easton are all below that. So that's just where you rank him as best available football player. There's no question the top four are going to go on day one, and I think that, Eason, somebody's not going to be able to resist it, whether they trade up to 31 or 32. And so that's going to drop three or four really good football players into day two, and depending on your board, they don't all necessarily come off that quick. So there could be a very good football player at 39, 40, 43. Maybe Pace gets lucky and that guy falls to 43. But maybe he can't resist himself and has to deal up to 39 because there's a guy who should have gone 25.
What does your crystal ball have New England doing at 23?
I think
they got to take a quarterback, don't they?
It depends on which ones are gone. That's really the issue. I could see Belichick being in love with Herbert. I'm not so sure I see him in love with Love, no pun intended. To me, Herbert is the more Love is the better athlete. Herbert is the more accomplished college quarterback. And so if Herbert's still there at 23, I'd be surprised if the Patriots took him. But if he's gone and Love is still there, I'm not so sure they would take Love. And nobody deals more than Belichick. I mean, if his guy is not there at 23, he's dealing down and starting to stockpile picks. But I think if Justin Herbert is still there at 23, which he very well could be, that's the Patriots pick.
What is worst case scenario for the Bears in terms of an infusion of talent to the Detroit Lions with the third overall pick?
The worst case scenario to the Bears. Boy, Danny, I don't think the Lions are that close to the Bears. I'm not sure what they could do. I cannot, in my wildest dreams, see Chico Pass and Chase Young at number two. And so once he's off the board, now I think Isaiah Simmons may turn out to be a better pro than Chase Young. And I'd hate to see him in Detroit for the next 5, 6, 7 years. But I'm not sure that the Lions would use that asset on a player without a set position. Is he going to play safety? Is he going to play linebacker? Is he going to play outside? Is he going to play inside? What are you going to do? I think the Lions are desperate to trade that pick. And I think if they turn it into a king's ransom, which could be like, you know, two ones and a two, you know, like a one and a two this year and a one next year, that's obviously not good for anybody in the NFC North.
Hub for television coverage. Danny and I are expecting the potential for a pull the covers up over the head nightmare Thursday night. You got 32 teams on location. You got the commissioner and all his people, reporters from all over the place. More than 50 players are going to have cameras at their locations, and all you got to do is punch a few buttons, and you don't even have to do that. Actually, our draft coverage will be a breeze compared to what they've got to do on TV. Tell everybody what all you've got cooking this week.
We're going to have some fun. I know that. We're going to have a five-way Zoom. It's not a Zoom, but you can call it that, going on Thursday night. Jeff Joniak and Tom Thayer, of course, are the voices of the Bears at our sister station, BBM, 780 and 105.9 on FM. And Jeff will be hosting along with Tommy and myself. And Dan Pompey will be with us. And David Haw, of course, co-host of our morning show. And we're saying 6 to 10, but we had a meeting today and we realized the first round's not going to be over by 10. And if the Bears did make a move, it would be to the back of that round. So we're going to stay through the first round on Thursday night. On Friday night, we'll be back with Jeff and I kind of co-hosting, because Jeff and Tom are going to have to leave us on occasion as the Bears make picks. But it will again be Jeff and Tom and myself and Dan Pompey and David Haw and Patrick Manley and Olin Cruz. We're all going to be bringing it to you Friday night. And then on Saturday from 11 to 5, 4, I guess. Actually, I'll join Bruce and Spiegs for a few minutes at the end of their show. And then from 11 to 4, we're going to take you through day 3, Mark Grody and myself, and we're going to bring our cast of thousands back to have input and analysis on everything the Bears do.
Hub, great stuff. We will be listening this weekend. Enjoy the draft.
Thanks,
Thank
Hub.
You, guys. I hope you enjoy it, too. Everybody stay safe out there.
Thanks. You do the same.
That's Hub Arkish with us on the McNeil and Parkins Show. It's interesting. He had O.J. Howard as much more valuable in a trade than I did, and people were just crushing me on the text line. Hub knows way more than Parkins, and I love Hub shooting down Parkins' ideas. And 68% of the audience says that would trade Tariq Cohen for O.J. Howard, and then Hub says it's ridiculous and that he would not trade, that Tariq Cohen is a better player than O.J. Howard. And so the transitive property there, right, means that you could get more for Tariq Cohen in a trade than the Bucks could get for O.J. Howard. If you could get a second or a third round pick for Tariq Cohen, I would do that yesterday.
Oh yeah,
I just think he's off. I think he's wrong on Tariq Cohen's value in the NFL.
I think yes. I just thinking on his feet there that he did overvalue him a little bit. But I did happen to love the texter who suggested we should do an hour one day of Hub shooting down your football theories.
That's fine.
Hub, Mike McCarthy is an idiot. I don't really want to address that, but I will. That's one of my favorites from 2 years ago.
That was a good one. Back in January, he had he was dismissive of a new quarterback coming in and starting week one over Mitch Trubisky off that Ryan Pace press conference. Listen, Hub has forgotten more about football than I do, but I'll put my bona fides up on the 2020 NFL with Hub and anyone else. I think he's off. I think that Tariq Cohen, when he's like, oh, he was a first team All Pro. Yeah, as a returner. Like, not as a. That's not what we're talking about here in trade.
It's not a good idea to be a wise guy right now.
All right. I love talking to Hub. It's one of my favorite segments of the week because he will spar and go back and forth and then say, all right, see you boys later. I think it's great. Yeah.
He uses the word yo-yo, too, some of those yo-yos out there. And I think we should keep that alive. Your generation is not really warmed up to that that word. Every now and again, Danny, humor me and just throw it out there when you're referring to people being idiots, just yo-yos.
You know, we have so many things going on in our world today where people are saying, how are we tolerating all this? I can't imagine Chiefs fans would accept that, or at least the majority of them. Obviously, there's yo-yos everywhere, but I mean.
That tickles me. I love that. Yo-yos everywhere.
There's yo-yos everywhere.
It's McNeil and Parkins, a couple of yo-yos on the score.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Yo-yos everywhere.
You got your lines over here. You got your weed smokers over here. You got your women over here.
There's yo-yos everywhere.
Oh, the cocaine circus with the Bulls in the early 80s. Bottom of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Athletics. The Wildcats would like to thank all of those working throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, including grocery store employees, restaurant staffs, and delivery drivers. We appreciate you. I'm already excited for Sunday, Mac. I want more. I want more of The Last Dance.
Yeah, something else to get upset about many years after the fact, perhaps. Hopefully, what is also captured and recaptured some joy that millions of Chicagoans were brought by those 98 Bulls. As much as it was like going to the dentist for them, seemingly, it was an enjoyable ride for the fans watching a sixth title in 8 years.
Hell yeah. I mean, I think that there's going to be some anger because I know the Bad Boys Pistons episode is one of them this Sunday. So there's going to be, you know, some old feelings about that in the late 80s. But I'm just here. There was unintentional comedy in there, too, man. Like, I can't decide what was worse, the fashion or the facial hair. Like, wow. Michael Jordan, because everyone was like, oh, he dressed so sharp, and he was, you know, he wouldn't speak to the media until he was, you know, put together. The suits were so baggy, and like David Stern's
porn mustache was just by cracky.
Yeah, like, yeah, in the 80s. God. Yeah, and media full of mullets, too, because in the 80s, not so much 90s, but there were still rocking mullet dudes in the 80s. And most of the guys we know still had hair. It's shocking to see that. You know, something that slipped through the cracks yesterday when we were talking about some of the things that made us think of the game today, or things that have sort of resurfaced. You talked about how sort of John Paxson has come full circle regarding minutes played. There was something said regarding the drafting of Jordan that clearly has died in the NBA. When interviewing Rod Thorne, who drafted Jordan, it was revealed if Houston would have passed on Hakeem Olajuwon, he would have been a Bull, because that's what you do in the NBA in the 1980s. You win championships with seven-footers. Nobody ever approached a draft thinking they were going to pass on a game-changing center for a 6'6 swing guy. No, no, no. Jordan would have never been a Bull had Houston let Olajuwon pass.
If the Bulls would have had the number one pick, he said he would have taken Olajuwon. Like,
yeah.
That was the consensus. And then the same thing with Portland's logic. Portland's logic was they already had a two guard because they had Clyde Drexler. Mm-hmm. So, you know, go take Sam Bowie. But whereas in today's NBA, where it's positionless basketball, and Steph Curry and Klay Thompson are two of the 10 best shooters in the history of the NBA, and they're teammates. And, oh, yeah, Kevin Durant is also up in there in top 10 or 12 shooters in NBA history. All three of them can be on the same team because you can't have too many good three-point shooters. Like, there's no reason that Clyde Drexler and Michael Jordan could not have just terrorized people like Jordan and Pippen did. Obviously, Drexler a couple inches shorter than Pippen, but the point remains, they would have been awesome wing defenders. They would have been an athletic mismatch every night, would have been a great scoring tandem. But in the old NBA, you had your point guard, your shooting guard, your small forward, your power mm-hmm. forward, your center. And so there wasn't a lot of creativity in terms of assembling the teams back then.
Yeah, I also am looking forward to episodes 3 and 4. You know, it was a great time in the franchise's history, obviously, and in Chicago history as well. It was great for commerce. It was great for the spirit of the city, civic pride, never higher than it was after those 6 titles in 8 seasons. I'm a Blackhawks man, as you know, and I would love to have seen a crew follow one of their cup teams for a year. I guess Andrew Shaw commented over the weekend, man, maybe it was Monday, that I'd love to see them do that for the 15 Hawks. Well, you can't go back a few years now and have a crew follow you around. I don't know if there would be enough existing video to do a documentary on it, but it leaves me thinking about those things, which other teams I'd like to see covered, because it would have to be a team that had drama, though, to make it this compelling, especially if you're going to do it on ESPN and expect a nation to jump on board. Obviously, Jordan and the Bulls answer that. You know, the dysfunction that existed with the Hawks was among the players with each other in that 15 season. With the 85 Bears, if they ever want to do a good documentary on it to get the taste of that 30 for 30 out of my mouth, I'd be all for it, because there were a ton of things unearthed in these first two episodes about the Bulls and the Last Dance that I was left wanting in the Bears documentary. They're going to cover way more ground about things that are way more personal to the guys involved than the cursory look at the 85 Bears we got from ESPN on that documentary 4 years ago.
Yeah, I think that would be, obviously, that's an iconic team. You could do way more with it than that 30 for 30 did. If you were going to do an era, like a run, I'd love to see a Sammy Sosa documentary where you had skinny Sammy.
Yeah, when he was the Panther, according to Hawk Harrelson. That's what
right.
that was his nickname. Moment. He's got Panther.
The 98 home run chase, yep, through 2003, Bartman, the whole thing, and then the blow-up of the team and the boombox and him leaving and all
sure.
of that.
Like, corked the, bat, the, all the, of it, yeah.
The rise and fall of Sammy Sosa with the Cubs, I think if you could go back and have a bunch of behind-the-scenes footage of it, that would be pretty pretty fascinating because, like, for my lifetime, and I, you know, we're all biased to, like, our favorite eras of sports, but I've said this before, you know, I look at, you know, sports fandom as a kid, like, your sweet spot is that, you know, 10 to 12 range, like that period of time. And for me, that's 96 to 98. So it's three Bulls titles and the home run chase for Sammy Sosa and the Cubs. Like, to me, there was nothing bigger than Michael Jordan and Sammy Sosa when and Kerry Wood when I was a kid, Dennis Rodman. So I'm eating this thing up with nostalgia, and I would do the exact same thing with that Cubs home run race. And just being able to relive that summer would be fantastic. So when you said, like, a Chicago sports documentary, that's really the only other one that I feel like I would consume with the same amount of fanaticism as I am this Bulls documentary.
Yeah, you and I, and you know how I feel about the 98 Cubs. We should get a few on, by the way, to talk about The Last Dance, just in the pursuit of balance, because they were important then, too. You and I are in Sosa's corner. We looked at the home run chase. It doesn't matter to me how old you were at the time. Baseball needed the Band-Aid after the strike ended the season in 94, and the home run chase, it provided it. Whether it was right or not, it didn't matter at the time to baseball. Baseball turned a blind eye. Why shouldn't it? It was trying to recapture the trust of a nation, and home runs were exciting. That was a hell of an era in baseball. You wanted to watch every night. You'd be online, looking at scores. Hey, man, what did the Cardinals do last night? McGuire homer again. That was a great, great summer for baseball.
And it's just like the moral superiority that people like feign to have over it. Like, they're doing that retroactively.
I don't think it's feigned in many cases. I think some people
they
really
were cheering when it happened.
Yeah, I know. Maybe because they felt they didn't know any better. I was cheering when it happened and really didn't care. I don't hold baseball players in a higher, you know, moral compass than I do football players. If somebody wants to juice up, doesn't get caught, more power to them. I didn't really care that those guys were juicing. I was enjoying seeing the ball fly out of the yard. Doesn't affect me.
Well, right. Well, also, I mean, I get the idea of it messing up your record book. Like, I understand why that would upset you. But the idea of it as an entertainment product and looking back on it, I'll wag my finger at you and demand an apology. It's, okay.
What is, right.
To
you've damaged
end?
Our game.
Yeah, it's very silly. Pretty high-profile local baseball anniversary we'll get to before Matt Spiegel at 5 on the score.
My feet feel like they're on a branch up here at Safeco Field.
Whew. Just got to breathe.
Everybody up all the way around this ballpark. The 3-2 umber pitch. Strike 3 called. Ball gets away from Pierzynski. He's pitched a perfect game. Umber has pitched a perfect game on Saturday afternoon. They mob him between the mound and home plate. His first win this year is a perfecto.
Happy, happy birthday to me. Happy birthday to me and to you.
On this date in 2012, in his second start of the season, Philip Umber. 9 strikeouts, 5 groundouts, 13 flyouts in only 96 pitches against the Seattle Mariners for the 21st perfect game in Major League Baseball history.
I remember it very well. I remember it as Ed Farmer, the late Ed Farmer, just described that Saturday afternoon because I was driving into the city to attend a surprise birthday party for my agent. He turned 50 that weekend. And I didn't want to lose the signal in the concrete jungle, so I parked right outside the Millennium Garage to catch the Mariners' last 3 outs of the game. And when Ed had the wrong venue, and I said, he did not just say that, did he? He had them at U.S. Cellular Field. But because of our kindnesses, it has been edited since. So, yeah, Philip Umber joining a list of baseball legends, most of them. Danny, the list of guys who authored perfect games is almost exclusively what you would expect it to be. It includes the names of Cy Young, Sandy Koufax, Catfish Hunter, Randy Johnson, Roy Halladay, And then there's Phillip Umber, who in that 2012 season had an earned run average in the upper sixes and a whip of 1.53. Which of these just doesn't belong? Phillip Umber, but on that day, unhittable.
Did have two I was just reading the Wikipedia page for the game. Did have two near no-hitters the year before, though. So he did have very good stuff when he had good stuff.
Yeah, the year before with the Sox was his best. The 2011 season, I think he actually made 26 starts that year. And I remember Spiegs and I had the chance to talk to him, I think just a few days after the fact. I think we had him on either Monday or Tuesday. And I got caught between questions right at the beginning of the interview and wound up asking him, what you been got going on?
That's how you will remember that one.
That is how I will. Just like, what did I just say? I look at Speaks. He looks at me. We just start laughing. Open mouth, say things. What you been got going on, 41 dog? Phillip Umber.
That's awesome.
You know, at the end, late in every season, the White Sox will do a clearance sale for items, and I bet Tanny has taken advantage of this on numerous occasions.
Yeah,
I know
the garage
I have.
Sale, yeah.
Yep, it's the garage sale in September. I got myself a Phillip Umber T-shirt a couple of years ago. My buddy Vans picked up for me for the low, low price of $5. It's wow. A perfect stain the deck T-shirt.
A perfecto stain the deck T-shirt. I like to go to those things. It's a good place to get bobbleheads at the end of the year. If you miss one or two over the course of the season, they'll have a few there. They had one of those Hawk Harrelson golf caps there when they had their garage sale at Sox Fest this year. So, yeah,
gotta have those.
Lots of stuff that your wife really loves to have around the house.
So you got a Phillip Umber, what did you say you had back?
It's just a T-shirt. It's just a T-shirt. Yeah, it's. I think it commemorates his perfect game. It might just say Umber 41 on the back. I don't know.
The jersey.
Yeah, it might be my only jersey. Well, no, I have an Adam Dunn jersey also.
Oh, no.
It was 2 years after he was done here. That was one of those $5 deals. Hey, you know, can't let the swamp donkey escape town without you having a T-shirt. Oh, great. This is what I've been wanting. Adam
Man,
Dunn.
The jersey, just tremendous value for randomness. Like, you feel like, all right, I'm going to throw down $20 to support, you know, Craig Counsell, for example, when he was on the Diamondbacks, and I had that one. I was like, I'm the only guy in Chicago who has a Craig Counsell Diamondbacks jersey. I love that shirt.
Yeah, you got it. It doesn't cost a whole lot, and you don't need an occasion to wear it. I mean, you're going to buy a jersey, you're going to wear a guy who's no longer playing years from now, who's an out-of-town guy. You don't have those occasions. A T-shirt you wear doing anything.
No, what was the most random jersey that you ever had? Because I think for me it was probably Tony Siragusa. Just like the fat guy for the skinny Jewish kid. I just always thought it was.
Was it gifted to you?
It was. It was gifted to me. Yeah. I like the purple jersey too. Glenn Big Dog Robinson, I had a Milwaukee Bucks jersey of his when I was a kid, which led to my first AOL screen name, DJP Big Dog.
I was gonna say, when I got my first job, like, you know, real jobs, like, you know, 2000, when I had a little money in my pocket, that was right when the throwback jersey era was starting to
a great era.
It was starting to become prominent. So I have a closet full, some since I've sold, but a lot of bad jerseys, throwback jerseys, old NFL jerseys. I had a Bengals 28 Corey Dillon jersey just because I like the black. I like the black Bengals jerseys, you know.
Yeah.
The Dante Culpepper road whites, you know.
Yeah, oh, Corey Dillon set an NFL record in that Bengals jersey Thursday night. It since has been broken a couple of times, but he broke Walter's record.
Mac, do you see the new Chargers unis that came out today?
I did, yes.
They look pretty fresh. Really?
They're okay.
Oh, you're crazy. I think the Chargers.
I don't know. I have a predisposition about anything Los Angeles Chargers. I don't like them not being in San Diego. I don't like.
Don't like it.
No, hey, Brian,
I don't like it.
Jerry Bors doing the Coda projections. I don't like them. Yeah, I just. No, they should be in San Diego. They shouldn't be on Hard Knocks at all. They're only going to be on it half the time, but they shouldn't be on Hard Knocks. Look, the people in Los Angeles don't care about the Rams and the Chargers. And you're going to give America the Rams and the Chargers in August on Hard Knocks. It just doesn't seem right.
The jerseys. I'm not talking about Hard Knocks.
I don't like the Chargers. I don't like their jerseys. No. Right. I like the Navy look best on the Chargers, though. I don't like the powder blue's okay for college. I don't like it on my pro teams.
All right. I always thought that baby blue, like the Natron Means era.
Yes, it is Natron Means out of North
Chargers.
Carolina.
I loved that jersey.
With Danian Tomlinson with the visor and those powder blues. Oh,
the best. Yeah. The absolute best.
Natron Means, by the time he left San Diego, was as wide as he was tall. That dude ate his way out of pro football almost as fast as Eddie Lacy did with Green Bay and Seattle.
We're going to be joined by Matt Spiegel, who we just love to talk. He says he's got baseball thoughts, Last Dance thoughts, and he had a COVID-19 song that we have to review with him as well. Matt Spiegel next on The Score.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.